You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. In this and every episode, we try to talk about issues that really are pertinent, helpful, and hopefully help you be more effective in your ministry. The vast majority of people who listen are connected to church planting, hence the New Churches Podcast. And we're really excited to know that it's the most listened to church planting podcast in the world. But we are increasingly reminded that all kinds of people listen to this podcast, and pastors and church leaders do, and that's a real privilege and something we try to steward well. So one of the things that I try to do, sometimes I try to get a guest that I just really know that you need to hear from. Now, we have a great team, and sometimes people, well, let's bring this person on. But I worked hard because I wanted to get on someone that I've known for about 15 years, maybe longer, and have been good friends for many years. And I have watched, his name's Eric Geiger, but I've watched Eric Geiger lead in multiple situations in pretty remarkable ways. As a matter of fact, I've relied on his leadership and coaching me. As a matter of fact, I teach leadership at a graduate level. When I teach leadership, I will often refer to Eric's leadership both by giving examples and also just by things he's written. He's probably best known for Simple Church, though his best book is called Identity, but that's another story for another day. But Eric is now, we served together at three places. This is the third place. We served together at Christ Fellowship in Miami, where he was the executive pastor and key part of leadership there. We served together at Lifeway, where he was the senior vice president. And really, we served at Lifeway for about 7-8 years together. And then he came out to Mariners Church. And Mariners Church is a pretty amazing church already, but Eric has brought a new level of vitality and enthusiasm to the church. And in all of those situations, Eric exercised remarkable wisdom, foresight, and change leadership. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is leading change. Eric, thanks for taking the time to join the podcast.
Man, I'm honored. I'm honored to be here with you. I always enjoy the combos.
Well, you know, what's funny is that this podcast started with Daniel M. and Todd and Ed Stetzer. So Todd Atkins and Ed Stetzer. So that was the podcast for years. And so those of you who don't know, Daniel and Todd both worked for Eric at Lifeway. So yeah, that's kind of a fun.
They're great dudes. I love those guys.
Yeah. Good folks. And they did a great job with the podcast. And then as we ended up, we partnered with the Send Network, and it, you know, gives us a opportunity to give away all kinds of stuff. So people get everything free now at newchurches.com. Something we couldn't do when it was a Lifeway podcast, now we can do. So that's kind of fun. Okay. So talk to us a little bit about change leadership. Because again, I've seen you come into Lifeway and you led a turnaround that was substantive. I've seen you come into Mariners, which probably was in a healthier state than Lifeway was when you had to lead that turnaround. I've seen you lead change. I guess I want to start by asking, what does a pastor or a church planter do well, or any staff member, right? So what does the church leader do well when he or she leads change well? What are some attributes or things you'd expect to see when change is being led well?
Great question. You must begin with really careful diagnosis of what needs to be changed, and not think that all change is created equal. I mean, there's different. Changing your follow-up process for a new believer is very different than changing the name of your church. You know, so just there's some principles I'm sure that are transferable from changing one discipline or process versus trying to change the whole culture or the whole mission or the whole identity. And so you definitely want to be sure you understand what level of change you're talking about, what really needs to be changed. That will be most important, because sometimes a leader, because leaders are bent towards vision and new and direction, if you're not careful, a leader, you can want to change stuff all the time. And that desire to change things can cause you to really unwisely attempt to tweak things that don't need to be tweaked, or to assume that the lever that needs to be pulled is this lever when it's not really the lever that needs to be pulled. So you want to, before you even attempt to change anything, just really hear from the Lord, walk in wisdom, have wisdom on what needs to change, the speed of which things need to change. Realize, especially for church planters, we're not talking about just an organization. We're talking about the body of Christ, the family of God, the bride of Jesus, I mean, the images that the scripture gives us. So this isn't just an organization. This is the church. And so we want to approach change very wisely.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because, you know, church planters, and this has been like a journey for me, you know, having planted and, you know, I mean, I could change on a dime and, you know, because I was the sole leader, particularly, you know, the church was maybe in a core development stage or a pre-launch stage. And even up to the beginning, you know, you get 7,500 people. I mean, it's just sort of like so dependent on your vision. But I heard Elmer Towns once say that the biggest cause of church plant failures outside of a personal failure of the leader is shifting, I think he said ecclesiology, but sort of shifting approaches to do church. Church planter grows, the church gets frustrated at a certain level, says, we're going to do it this way. And it's like, well, wait a second, that's not what we all signed up for. And then you're doing it this way and that way. So how do you, when you think through the process, you know, I've seen you at Christ Fellowship, at Lifeway, and at Mariners. So how do you judge some of those things? Like you said, you know, what needs to be changed? What right levers? How long does it take? Because I've seen you think through that process, but I think
I think
sometimes it's intuitive to you in ways that it's not intuitive to everybody else. But I've also seen you give advice on how people can think through it. So yes, agree. You got to think about the levers. You got to think about when it needs to be changed. But how do you process that when you look at it? Maybe give us some examples from your own journey, your ministry experience.
Great. I'll go high level on a bit of theology and philosophy and then get practical. So you definitely want, and no matter what kind of change you're talking about, you want to realize that a lot of people are going to wrestle with even the word change. You know, Napoleon famously said that whenever he would give direction to his troops, a third would love it, a third would hate it, and the third would wait to see who was right. So whenever you announce a new direction, because again, change is always about a new direction, there'll be a third who are like, they love it. They want to try something new. There'll be a third who don't like it because it's new. And there'll be a third that wait to see if you're wise and wait to see if it's right. So because you know that people will wrestle with change, I think theologically you want to lay some groundwork that change is part of what it means to be a Christian. So we were changed when we became his, but we weren't just once and for all changed. We are being changed. We are being transformed. So part of what it means, if there's anyone who can understand change, it's us. If there's any group of people in the world who embraces change, it's us, because our growth as a Christian is about being changed. We are constantly being changed. And so I would just kind of hit that at the high level. And then when it comes to, okay, let me do a little bit of analysis and then communicate, I think the counsel I give, Ed, might differ a little bit from what some of the business theorists articulate about change management, although they have very wise and savvy principles, and some of those need to be listened to, but there is some cautions I have when you're dealing with the church. So when it comes to evaluating, are you changing a process, you know, or are you trying to change the culture? Are you changing the direction, or are you changing a program? I mean, those are very different things. So on the culture, on the direction, those are high level. They change the whole fabric of the church. And so you then need to spend a lot of time communicating, a lot of time building buy-in with leaders. If it's the smaller level of change, there is an understood from people that you're serving expectation that's what leaders do, that you are constantly tweaking. And in fact, if you don't do that, you'll lose credibility. And so by changing things at the lower level, meaning it's not massive widespread change, you actually do build credibility for the broad you know, the broad base change. Now, there are times as a leader, and I don't necessarily love these times. I mean, people have said, "Hey, you've done that stage well. Would you like to do it again?" I don't really love the broad base change. I mean, it is a lot of sleepless nights. It's a lot of work. COVID is an example. So that was not a small change. That brought significant change for a period of time to every church. You had to change people's job descriptions for a season. You had to change your approach for a season. So that's an example of broad-based change that was forced upon you. I've led in the marketplace at Lifeway where broad-based change was forced upon us because there had been a 30-year decline in ongoing Bible studies, and that was a critical part of what Lifeway was and is. And so we needed to introduce new products into the market. We needed to change how we worked in order to accomplish those things. I mean, that was broad-based change. Leading to a pandemic was broad-based change. So here's where I will differ a little bit in some of the business leadership principles and books. The most widely read book on change management is a book by John Kotter, Harvard Business School professor, called Leading Change. And it is a great book. He gives 8 principles to change. If you line up those principles with the book of Nehemiah, you'll actually see the special revelation found in Nehemiah lining up with the general revelation of what Kotter's observed in people. I mean, you actually see some of that. Here's the one caution. The biggest push that Kotter will make in the book is you have to create dissatisfaction with the status quo. And he's right. If people don't see a sense that they need to change, they'll resist change. However, so the huge asterisk I have coached and counseled church leaders on is you have to be careful you don't create such dissatisfaction with the church that people have loved and given to and has been their community. So there's a tension when you're changing in practices in a church. This is your family. You know, if I want to change some practices in my family, I don't need to spend time bashing my family. You know, there's some tension there as a church leader. So I think the way I resolve the tension is, yes, Kotter, create some dissatisfaction, but instead of only doing that, also root the new direction into values that are in the past. So affirm the past. Affirm what your church was. Affirm what your church is. Find everything that you can brag on, and not in a manipulative way, but show how the new direction is a further fulfillment of who the church is and who the church always has been. So instead of, just beating the people up, You actually are encouraging and affirming and inspiring for something new. Oftentimes, new pastors will go into, I know these are church planters, but maybe they've taken over a new church. You have to be careful you don't do this. Sometimes church leaders, they I think in passive aggressive ways bash the past, thinking that's going to give them more credibility. Like, oh, you're finally here to fix it. Oh, it's so awesome you're here. But you really just show how insecure you are when you do that, because you're showing that you need to be the hero as opposed to the mission being the hero or the values being the hero. And what we do as we shepherd God's people, we want the mission to be the hero. We want Jesus to be the hero, the values that we hold to be the hero. So root new direction change in those things.
That's good. Good. I love Kotter and teach Kotter and think it's super helpful. But I also think that it does sort of assume a business context where you'd get up and the first thing is create a sense of urgency. And you have to get up and say, your sales are down and our finances are in trouble. And it's just different. But there is a pattern that's there. And I like how you tied that into Nehemiah as well. We're going to have Eric too in a future episode talk about some of the what I'm calling the theological turn that we're seeing in some churches that maybe were birthed in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and what does that look like, and how he's managed some of that change as well. But I want to stay on the topic of change here. And let me remind you too, if you're listening and you're finding this helpful, which how could you not? The Eric's super. And I should tell you that like we're actually recording this at Mariners Church, where I'm now a scholar in residence and teaching pastor here at Mariners. And so when I said we're serving together again, so I'm, you know, by the time this releases, I think I'm the dean of the Talbot School of Theology or around that time. And what is it? There's an old commercial. I think it was a electric razor commercial or something. And the guy says, I liked it so much, I bought the company. Well, I would say that I liked Eric's leadership so much, I joined the team. So I'm tracking with that. So, okay. So when, church planners are going to be, and our audience is disproportionately young. And Eric Geiger, first of all, I knew you when you were young, and I cannot imagine like, I went to the inner city of Buffalo, New York at 21, Donna and I did, and we planted a church among the urban poor. And I was like, I died on every hill. I fought every fight. I was brash. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I was brash. So is there a way because I remember at Lifeway, you had this whole team of young leaders. Is there a specific way to help young leaders be more wise in the change leadership process? Is it, you know, go slower than you think at first. And, you know, maybe when you're older, you need to be reminded to take more risks. I don't know. What do you think? What advice do you give with young leaders?
Man, it's so funny that you mentioned your time when you were in Buffalo at that age. And I look back at even when we first met, you know, when I was in Miami as executive pastor, I was 27. I mean, I was really young.
Only 27. That's
yeah.
Fun.
Wow. I mean, but I look back and I know God used my youth and naivety. I mean, there's decisions that I made that I don't know at times if I'd have the faith to make now, because I just know more now. Like I know that may not be super wise, you know, but I didn't know. I didn't have all the rules yet and just went for it. And so I often caution to give advice that I wouldn't have received, you know, meaning now I'm not talking about having a bad character or being, you know, running over people or
right the bad stuff. Right.
Yeah. I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about the beautiful, naive, we can do this faith, you know,
like going to inner city of Buffalo, New York and planning a church with, I didn't have a job. I became a contractor. I mean, yeah, it's like, and things that maybe I need to be willing to do tomorrow. But it's something that young, you know, in the case of this young man just stepped out in faith.
This morning, I was with our elders, our directional elders, and we approved our new budget, our new fiscal year budget. And they were talking about how big of an increase it is. And it is a big increase. And, I mean, it's the largest increase that Mariners Church has ever had in a budget year. And I shared in that meeting how I'm super thankful that they were actually the ones nudging me. I mean, these guys are filled with such faith. They were nudging me. And I recalled when I was in Miami, I remember when we had a growth run, we raised the budget from 4 million to 5.2. And I didn't even think, I didn't even blink at it. Like, I just thought that was the next step. And now at my age, I would know the percentage. I didn't even know the percentage. I just know it needed to be 5.2. I just knew that's $100,000 a week. We can do that. But now I would ask so many more questions before going for that kind of percentage. And so you're hearing me say for the young audience, man, be liberated to just go for it, you know, as long as you do so with being filled with the Spirit, and the Lord will use even your naivety.
See, I just want to say too, but think it through more. Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of 22-year-old Ed Stetzer. Just think it through more. I don't know.
What 27-year-old Geiger benefited from the most was some wise older leaders who loved me, who would spend time with me. And yeah. So I think, I mean, what you're doing now by listening to old guys like me and Ed talk is helpful. You know, we're not sitting down over coffee, but you are, you know, hopefully gleaning some wisdom from this. So, you know, don't make decisions alone. Don't make change decisions by yourself. There's wisdom in a multitude of counselors. You don't have to pull that trigger today. You can talk tomorrow to somebody, you know, breathe a bit. All of that's wise.
Well, I'm going to end it at that. I think that's good advice and good counsel right now. But change leadership is something that church planters just, you sort of probably are change attracted. There are some people who are change averse. Yes. Church planters tend to be change attracted. They want that. The rule of thirds, by the way, that you heard Eric mention earlier, is just you could Google Napoleon, a rule of thirds. There's all things helpful written on that as well. Eric refers to it a lot in his teaching, but I think it's so helpful and true. In a church plant, you tend to attract more change attracted people. They want to be there, but then you got to pastor them, and then it does level out at that point as well. Anyway, thanks for listening to the New Churches podcast. Again, good helpful insight from Eric Geiger. Remember to leave a review wherever you download your podcast, and keep listening. We're having Eric on a future episode about kind of the theological turn that we're seeing. We'll talk some about that as well. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.